I would start by really thinking about our stores as destinations, not just a place that transactions take place in. They need to be able to buy these customers into an experience. You know, how can we create a little bit of magic that drives people to come to me in my store and not just click a button on their phone or on their desktop? It's so important. It really, really is.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, we're doing one of our What Would You Do episodes. Yes, it's WWYD time. And in this episode, we're not talking e-commerce at all. We are talking physical retail, actual retail stores. How can you make your physical retail store successful this year? I know a lot of you listening have both the physical and the online retail side of things. So this one is for those of you selling physically. We have the brilliant Melissa Moore joining us. She is super, super good at all this retail stuff, as you will hear when we get to my proper intro in a few minutes. She's got all the plaudits going and serious amounts of experience. She's also fresh back from NRF, which is the biggest retail conference of the year, which just happened at the beginning, kind of mid-January in New York. So she'll be sharing some of her insights from that and some of her insights from going around some of the top stores in New York as well. Please listen right to the end so you don't miss out on her top tips and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. Melissa Moore is the retail advisor and the host of the Retail Tea Break podcast. She's an expert in all things retail with over 25 years working with national brands. And she's been a Rethink Retail top retail expert for the last 3 years and named in Retail Technology Innovation Hub's top 100 retail technology influencers list for 2025. Hello, Melissa.
Chloe, I sound epic this morning. That is incredible. Go me in 2026.
Go you indeed. And I'm just impressed I made it through the whole of that without stumbling over the large repetition of the word retail. If anyone was in any doubt about what you specialize in, we definitely know it's retail. So Melissa, how did you get into the world of retail? What brought you here?
Do you know what? I have some really vivid memories, Chloe. First of all, I suppose as a young girl, a shopper in Laura Ashley, I'm sure lots of your listeners will know the brand really well from when they were across the UK, I suppose, on our high streets. So I vividly remember being kind of brought in and just in awe of how beautiful the stores, how great the people were. And that was really that first kind of initial baptism into retail. And, you know, fast forward then, my first retail job was in Laura Ashley. So really kind of coming full circle there. And it's gorgeous to have been able to serve the customer, understand the customer, get into kind of product and range and stock rooms and all that nice stuff, and really, really get my hands dirty.
It is. I mean, I think people think from the outside, even people running e-commerce stores think retail is easy, but there are so many different levers and different things you have to get right, aren't there?
It's unbelievable. And I mean, I was really lucky at that age to kind of, again, first job, but being given so many different tasks to do in so many areas of retail. And so this was back with the time where e-com, what on earth was that back in the day? You know, there were little inklings of it, but nothing, of course, was happening back then. So it was all those physical jobs. So you were getting kind of those touch points of what was going on in marketing or accounts or what was going on with range planning. So again, it was kind of building that kind of, I suppose, fascination with the industry. And then from there, obviously then, yeah, I did the degree, did a master's, but kept being drawn back into retail. So really worked my way up then from, I suppose, that shop floor, that initial job with Laura Ashley, all the way up then into management and running stores and areas and all of that. But again, at the end of the day, it was a people first job for me. It was very much about having a gorgeous product, really good ranges, obviously really good supply of them. And then of course you start to layer up then this whole idea of e-commerce and social media as I kind of really start to come to a fore of knowing that I adore this industry and I'm incredibly passionate about it.
Love it. So let's stop looking back. Let's start. We're looking forwards. Your what would you do if is, what would you do if you wanted to increase your physical store sales in 2026? What is the recipe for physical world sales growth? I'm just going to leave it like that. Give us the answer.
Oh, if only I had it all. But I look, I have a couple of ideas, and I suppose I take this from my time talking to retailers as I do now, visiting retail stores. I'm just back from New York and NRF's big show. So National Retail Federation, 41,000 people through the doors of that, Chloe. It was bananas. So I kind of take from all these different aspects. And I suppose my first big answer to your question, what would you do if you wanted to increase your physical store sales in 2026 is, I would start by really thinking about our stores as destinations, not just a place that transactions take place in, but you know, they need to be more than that. They need to be able to buy these customers into an experience. You know, we have to give people a reason to visit. I'm talking to you today and it is bucketing down outside, like it's torrential, it's nasty, winter's crappy anyway. So why on earth would someone want to, you know, leave the comfort of their home and their slippers and physically come and find you? So again, can we create moments in stores, whether it's a product launch, whether it's a workshop, a demo, a styling session, you know, how can we recreate a little bit of magic? And that's not just for big flagships or department stores. That could be for your corner shop. How can we create a little bit of magic that drives people to come to me in my store and not just click a button on their phone or on their desktop? It's so important. It really, really is.
And is it as much about creating those one-off events like the product launches or the VIP try-on sessions or whatever, as well as creating like an evergreen option as well? So is it both parts?
I kind of think it is. And again, this goes back to, and I was really thinking about this earlier, your corner shop back in the day would have had the notice board where you would have been able to kind of, whether you wanted to advertise jobs or you wanted to find, you know, even a cleaner or a pet sitter, that's a reason to go. So not only were you buying your milk or your bread, but there was a reason almost to interact with the community. And then when you amplify that out now, as I said, I was just in New York and a store like Petco, like a phenomenal flagship store, that's actually heart of the community. Like, it's a community hub. It's got maps of places you can go and walk your dog in the parks, of all those different places around where the store was, where your pets are welcome. It's got a grooming parlor. Obviously, it's got product to sell. It's got really knowledgeable sales colleagues. But there's so much more than just the transaction of buying and selling, you know, in and out. It was a place that felt so comfortable. I'm a dog owner, and yes, my dog wasn't with me in New York, but oh my goodness, I can just imagine how relaxed and easy it would be. Loads of information there, loads of people to chat to. Like, it's a much bigger experience than just buying a boring pint of milk.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Like, the destination creation can be both super exciting and glamorous, or it could be a notice board with a map on it. You know, it's that full remit. So what else can we do once we've got our destination element right?
The next one, and I really don't want to annoy people with this, but I think, again, it's thinking old school with this. So using data, and look, we all know there is so much of it available out there now in retail, but using data to feel more human, not more corporate and techie and all that kind of, I have to say, nasty stuff, which again, will probably get me into trouble. But really, when I think about 2026 for our stores, we should be recognizing loyal customers. You know, we should know exactly what they buy. So if you go back 30, 40 years, again, you walked into your corner shop, shopkeeper knew you, Chloe. They knew, you know, maybe the paper you were going to buy. They knew maybe what your favorite drink was that you might buy on a Friday after school, whatever it might be. But they knew you. And the same if we went to a boutique, maybe we were buying a dress, you know, maybe we had a favorite kind of brand. They really knew us inside out and back to front. And I just think in this day and age, with all this incredible tech, you know, and it's right across retail right now, why aren't we using it properly to really hyper-personalize those transactions, you know, to really let Chloe know when a new dress does come in from a new brand, or here's offers on your favorite beverage, or whatever that might be. But we should be thinking with that mindset of 30, 40 years ago, but really utilizing every tool we have our disposal now to just bring it to a place where I do feel like I'm having a proper interaction with a brand. Again, not transactional, not corporate, because it's really boring.
And it's mad, especially for those who are doing, you know, who've got the bricks and the clicks, the, you know, the quite sophisticated clicks activity going on. There's all this information you have on the customers that you could share with your store staff and have it ping up when they're coming in for whatever reason, when they're going past the checkout, but yet it's not happening. And it seems such a simple and straightforward, you know, amend to make when you've, when you're already collecting that data in one channel, why aren't you using it in another channel? All right. Now I'm going to whip you through these because I know we've got six of these to go through. So what's the next thing we've done? We've created our destination. We're sharing that data so we can create those more human connections. What else can we be doing?
So the next one is the biggie for me. I obviously work in retail education and I work as a retail trainer. So it would be remiss of me not to talk about training. Training is so important nowadays, especially in our physical stores. It is simple things like building confidence. It's about building communication skills. So again, this is like retail 101. But I think the layering on top of that, it's sales training. So not big, pushy and harsh, gentle. Emotional, you know, having empathy. It's all these kind of quiet selling skills, which actually seem to have gone out the window over the last 10 years in retail. But I think it's really important, you know, whether it's demonstrating products, talking about them, telling an origin story. There's so many retailers out there, especially if they're in the e-com space that then open stores. We need to be able to, as you know, I said at the beginning, entice people in, but let's talk to them. So training really helps and support here. And that's the big one I'm seeing over the last couple of years. I'm being enticed into kind of retailers and brands to help them, support them. They built beautiful stores, but it's not quite working. And for me, it's the training aspect that's missing.
And it's so not a once and done element, the training, is it? It's like, I'm sure many companies are great when they open a store. You know, oh, we've got a whole new team. We'll have to tell them about the company and tell them about the products. But as soon as somebody new comes on board, none of that happens. So it really is that kind of evergreen, ongoing training activity, isn't it?
It has to be. And I really saw a change in that last year. Lots of big brands were coming to me for that exact reason and going, okay, the store's been open a couple of years now. Can we revisit? Or they're already booking it in, like they're making that commitment to their people saying, we'll do this refresher. And it can be a real fun, interactive refresher. Some refreshers only take an hour. But again, we're keeping key messages, key values front of mind. And of course, our customers seeing it. And it's coming through the till as well, which then for me, it's win-win for everyone.
We love a win-win. What's next?
Now, this is going to be a little bit controversial, but I'm going to say it. Making every store a content studio. Now, don't come at me for this, but I think for me, it is about that social engagement. It's also the behind the scenes stuff. Like, customers are nosy. I certainly am. So seeing a little bit more about what's going on in physical stores with your team. And again, this is really important. We hear Grace Andrews an awful lot talk about employee kind of content creation and brand experiences. Again, I think it brings an emotional connection and it's a really lovely way of a brand or a retailer showing exactly who they are. So whether it's product launches, whether it's TikTok lives, it's just bringing that connection from your physical store, again, into the palm of someone's hand, if it's their mobile phone they're using. But it's just a really nice way to kind of continue building that engagement.
And I think for anyone who's thinking, oh, we couldn't possibly let our store team do that, let's refer back to Melissa's previous point about training. If you've trained them and they understand the business and the business values, then you're halfway towards them being able to become a content studio because they already know the foundational stuff, don't they?
And I think that's so true, but also they're the people that talk to your customers every day. I don't care that the chat box does. These are real people that meet the needs of your customers every day. Nobody knows your customer or how they utilize your product better than the people in your physical stores. I think we need to trust them and use them an awful lot more. But also, isn't it gorgeous that me as a customer sitting at home is seeing a TikTok creation or even a video recorded on your website that's come from someone you know and recognize? Like, again, there's a really nice emotional connection there. And we know that. And there's plenty of data to say, you know, if we build that emotional connection, we tend to stay long, you know, loyal for longer. And again, there's money to be made there.
What's our number five?
Number five, removing friction. Now, that sounds really, really boring, Chloe. I know it does. But look, whether it's paying, whether it's returns, whether it's even navigation, how many times have you been stuck in a queue or you don't know how to return or they're making you jump through hoops for returns? So again, I think we need to have a little bit of respect for our customer and we need to take away those barriers or that friction. Like, in this day and age with all the incredible tech that we have, like, we don't make people queue when we're online. Why on earth are we doing it in store? Why are we making them queue in one single file for one till operator? I was in Sephora in New York. I'm banging this drum for New York at the moment. Apologies, but it's so fresh in my mind. I was in a queue Saturday morning in Sephora and the queue was pretty long. But really savvy, well-trained staff, of course, started pulling some of us out. If we were paying by card, they literally took us aside, didn't have to go to another till point. They took this magic little gizmo out of their back pocket and hey presto, you know, they ran it through there and then I could tap away and I was gone. Like, it was just seamless. So there's plenty of tech out there that really does help us return goods, pay for stuff, look for a bigger size, a different color, whatever it might be. We should be using this, as you said, really, in every aspect of the business now. We've got to remove the friction. You know, shopping in a physical store should be easy in 2026, and it's still not.
Yeah, removing friction is, I don't think you can ever say that too many times in any scenario where you're trying to sell to people, because it's a nightmare for getting conversions, whether it's real world, electronic or contracts. Absolute nightmare. Okay, our sixth and final one. Melissa, what is it?
This almost starts to bring different aspects of retail together, because my sixth kind of idea is about giving each store a clear job. So obviously in the days and age now of e-commerce and a lot of stores being used almost as warehouses, which disgusts me, I have to say. I don't want to see boxes on the floor. I don't want to see a store just piled high full of crap. So do we need to have specific stores as fulfillment hubs? Maybe some then more like your flagships as experience centers or gorgeous kind of wow moments. Do we need to have stores that are for like repair services? So again, are we bringing that circularity into play? Are there then different stores because of maybe their location that are community or event spaces mixed in with retail? You know, and then have you got some that could even be like that whole try before you buy? So maybe we've got more fitting rooms. So what do we want? Because realistically, I think gone are the days where your retail store can be all things to all people, because we've gone for smaller formats, remember, with a lot of retail stores over the last few years, because it suits the needs of the customer. So what are we trying to do? So instead of being everything, can we really start to hone in on what we're amazing at and then shout about that? Because I think this is really where staff then understand what's needed of them. The customer really gets the kind of the messaging. And I almost think the retailer's happier as well, but they've got to make that decision to start with.
Yeah, you can't just let it evolve, can you? It needs to be defined. This is what we want, this is where we need to go. Okay, that's our six for increasing physical store sales in 2026. Now, you've mentioned NRF in New York a couple of times, and I feel it would be very remiss of me to ask, what were your takeaways from the event? What were the big trends you could see coming? What were the big things you took from that this year?
I think, we haven't spoken about it at all, funnily enough. AI, it was everywhere. Agentic AI, it was being shouted from the rooftops. Of course it was. But actually, I think what frustrated me, and bear in mind, 41,000 people, Expo Hall was enormous. Like, I obviously didn't get to see everything or hear every session. I genuinely felt that we haven't moved on much more from last year's show, which I know is going to annoy a lot of people again, but hey, I'm calling it as I saw it at the time. That yes, agentic AI was kind of the new buzz phrase last year, and it was fascinating to see it across all aspects of retail, whether it was checkout, whether it was search, whether it was payment, all of that stuff. But this year I kind of just felt it was more of the same. So it'll be really nice to see this being embedded in our retail stores now, see what's really working for retailers, seeing all the really good use cases. So that was the one thing, because again, everyone has to mention AI. But I think the really good message coming out of the whole show for me was this community aspect. So whether that's Ben Francis from Gymshark talking about how amazing, obviously he's built this phenomenal community, whether that's online or in person. everyone seems to be talking about this community. So it's great that our values have almost gone back to that simplistic aspect of retail, bringing people on board, whether it's our teams, our colleagues, whether it's the customer, but also we're really trying now to build a long-term value-based kind of shopper, I suppose, influence that we want. We don't want a one and done anymore, because I think for too long it's been transactional. So I'm loving this idea that retail's gone back, gone a little old school, and this is where we want to drive our businesses and our brands forward, you know, past 2026, is building this kind of legacy community idea when it comes to retail.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Melissa, are you ready for the top tips?
Let's do it.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
And of course, because I talk a lot, there was definitely not going to be just one. And having come back from New York with two books in my suitcase, I'm going to give them both a shout out. The first one is AI for Retail Success. It's the second book from Linda Johansson James and Sharon Gee. And this is the shopper version. So this one's talking all about how shoppers can use AI to shop smarter, save money and time. And that's on the back of their initial book, AI for Retail Success, which was for the retailer. Brilliant, brilliant books. Really easy to read, and I mean that in a good way. Really practical too. So that's number one. The second book I came back from New York with is The Material Life by Lisa Amlani. So I'm mindful neither of these are e-com books or marketeers books, but again, it really gives a good deep dive into different aspects and processes of retail. So a great book from Lisa there. Second one from her in the last kind of 18 months. And the first one was a great read too. So that's two books from me for your Friday reading.
Love it. The traffic top tip, which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Now, you can tell I'm not a marketeer here, but actually one thing that I swear by right now, showing up and showing up in person. Nothing for me, whether it's a retailer or a brand. So if you work for a retailer and you're showing up on stage or at an event, certainly for me, going to things, talking to people, making that emotional connection. And then you start to see that obviously play back with people you meet, but also you see it play back in store. So if I'm telling my retailers to get their staff to show up and be empathetic and listen, I need to do it too.
I actually, just to back you up on that one completely, we had an interview a couple of few weeks back. I will mention it, everyone, at the end. I'll look up the number and let you all know about it when we get to the end. With Hillary, who runs a fashion boutique in the north of England. And one of her marketing strategies is going and doing talks at all the local WIs.
Love it.
Get out there, meet the people.
That's it.
Get them to start building that emotional connection. So it totally can work in retail as well. So I love that. That definitely counts as a traffic top tip. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Well, you know, it's January and I am genuinely feeling very refreshed and very sparky about 2026, because this is not a cool tool at all, Chloe. So forgive me for this one. It's sleep. Like, everybody listening knows how chaotic and crazy and amazing this industry can be, but oh my goodness, it can be completely overwhelming. So for me, that's like my secret tip that I'm trying to almost, I'm saying it out loud, I feel, because I want to keep telling myself and reminding myself, but it is sleep, because I think that's the foundation of everything we do, whether it's in this industry or beyond. And I'm finding it's really helping.
I sleep can never be mentioned enough as a good thing to do. And I think so often when you're running, you know, new businesses or in the thick of a peak season or something, then sleep can end up on the back burner. And if you're at NRF, the amount of stuff that goes on, I suspect there is actually 24-hour-a-day stuff going on should you want to do it. So totally love the sleep.
part of me wants to admit that those 18, 19 hour days nearly killed me and having 4 hours sleep was horrific. But I think that's why I appreciate sleep even more, having come back and having recovered. I do. I think for business generally, and again, I run my own business technically, like without it, I'm useless. So apologies to anyone out there who meets me on a day where I've had 4 hours sleep, because I'm of no use to anyone.
Yep, I'm the same. Sleep has to come first. Good quality sleep. Right, the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce or retail store?
Do you know what? This is a really interesting one. So from a shopper's perspective, I genuinely applaud those tiny, tiny packages that are now appearing. Gone are the days of the big boxes or even the big branded boxes. I do not care as a shopper what something arrives to my house or my office in. So I love the fact that we're getting much savvier about less packaging, that we're getting savvier about not branding the hilt out of everything. I don't think the outside of the box really matters to me. Once there's something inside that reminds me where I've got it from or whatever, but that's what I love. I think those retailers and e-commerce brands that are being really clever now with tiny, tiny little packages or are reusing boxes that they've got from something else, bring it on. I want to see more of that in 2026, because I think that's a really small way of kind of, I suppose, reducing wastage. And it's something for me as a shopper I genuinely love to see.
Yeah, one of the best ways you can go about doing it too. So love that. Thank you, Melissa. Now, before we say goodbye, for those who are going, I need to speak to Melissa about my retail business, where can they find you and your business on the web and social media?
So I suppose the easiest way, as most of us are there right now, it's Melissa Moore on LinkedIn. Do please feel free to DM me there. The website, this is quite ironic, Chloe, and you're probably going to kill me for this, is currently having a revamp, which is really exciting. It's slightly back up and running. So that's the retailadvisor.ie. Yes, I'm based in the west of Ireland at the moment, so hence the .ie. You can, of course, listen to the Retail Tea Break podcast, which I'd applaud you for doing, across all podcast platforms, much like yourself, Chloe. And of course, then you can find me on Instagram under The Retail Advisor or The Retail Tea Break Podcast. So you'll find me anywhere at all.
Awesome. Melissa, thank you so much for coming on and sharing what it's going to take to make a retail business super successful in 2026 and your takeaways from NRF. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Chloe.
Okay, then, there's your retail roadmap sorted for this year. Great to get Melissa's thoughts on NRF as well, kind of hot off the press. We recorded this just at the end of January, so only about a week and a half after NRF. So very hot off the press thoughts there from her. And those six key points that she ran through for growing your retail store, your physical retail store sales in 2026. First of all, turning your store into a destination. How can you create a reason for customers to come in? Secondly, use data to create a more human interaction experience. Third, training and including the all-important actually teaching your team how to sell. Sounds remarkable. Really isn't. Really important to do that. Four, content studios. Can your store become a content studio? Number five, remove friction. Will forever be a top priority in the world of retail and online retail. And number six, give each store a clear job. What is the role of that store in your larger business plans? And as Melissa ran through, there's various obvious options you've got going on there at the moment with how retail's currently evolving. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can use our direct episode short link, that's ecmp.info/ the number of this episode, and that will take you straight to the correct page on the site. And when you get to the website, go on, put yourself on our email list. You won't regret it. And I mentioned that I mentioned in one of the top tips about an episode that we recorded that I thought really built on Melissa's point. It's episode 574, which is all about how one fashion boutique manages their retail and online stores. And my guest for that is Hilary Large, and she shares a lot of great insights and advice in that one. And it really does build on what Melissa's been talking about in this episode. You can also find all our What Would You Do episodes at ecmp.info/WWYD. Thank you so much for tuning into this one. And into every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, we bring you a new interview every week because we want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.